Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, September 20th. I'm Ray Graff. With the autumn starting on Sunday, it's time for the final gardening program of the summer. Joining us today, horticulturalist Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, gardener Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. They are here to help you prepare your garden for the coming of fall. So give us a call, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also email us if you wish, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, and remember the number, it's a popular program. Get in early, 800-348-2551. Trees, leaves, and the telltale twig all coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening show today, and we bring back the terrific trio of gardeners to answer your questions. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. We welcome your calls right now. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Bob, Fred, Greg, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here.
Good to be back.
Thanks for having us.
You guys seem pretty loosey-goosey here in the pregame. I'll tell you what, I'm a little concerned about the program today. All right, somebody brought a telltale twig. What is it and who brought it?
Yeah, so I brought it for you, Ray. It's a present from my brother Mike, who is my partner in business.
Okay.
He heard on the radio one day on one of these shows that someone was talking about a weather stick.
Oh.
And there was someone needed to identify it. So he said, well, I've got one, and okay, I want you to give it to Ray.
Okay. So this is it's called the telltale twig, and you put it in any outside location, and the twig will point up when a high front is near and good weather is on the horizon, and it'll point down, indicating inclement weather and a low front forming. Well, that's interesting.
Isn't that? I mean, so it's reading, you know, some kind of barometric pressure.
So it's bending now, so we're sinking pretty low here on the show already. All right.
Yeah, I will say that I have one at the house, and it does work.
Really?
Ironically, my brother Mike also gave it to me. I don't know if it's a thing.
Same brother?
Nope, different brothers. No relation, but they are both Mikes, and they both gave us weather sticks.
All right. I'm going to use this, and I will report back.
All right.
And we would like to know.
And I guess I misspoke at the beginning of the show. The script said autumn begins on Sunday. Apparently, that's not the case.
It's Saturday.
It's close.
We think it's Saturday evening.
Okay.
So you're I think you were
enough.
3 hours off.
You know, I'm like Ron Burgundy. I just read whatever's in front of me here, so it doesn't matter. What's new with you, Bob Graves?
Oh, it's been a pretty good September. Good month to be working on lawns, planting trees and shrubs and perennials. And mums are out now. That's the big thing now. You get some fall color with your mums.
Uh-huh. Okay. And Fred, anything happening over at the Landis Arboretum?
You know, we wound out the fall plant sale, which went really well. And we're gearing up for some workshops this coming weekend. In fact, there's still room to register on site. We're doing one on fermentation, how to make wines.
Oh,
and really, really awesome sauerkrauts. And the guy that's teaching it is just incredible. And then also in the afternoon, there's going to be a mushroom workshop. So you get to walk the grounds and look at all things fungi. Sounds like it's going to be a good time. I know it's
good for you.
If you've got time, you can't go wrong.
We did a fermentation show on Friday in Food Friday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How'd it go?
Well, learned all about sauerkraut and Brian, who had to do the 3:30 show, said, what have you done to the studio?
I hate to ask you, but did they talk about fermenting fish?
They did not thankfully talk about fermenting fish.
Well, apparently quite good. I've never done it, but we're going to learn about it on Saturday over at landisarboretum.org if you want to get in info.
Borrow the telltale twig for that?
No, I'm going to pass on that twig. I'm trying to quit. Right.
All right, Greg Ward, what's happening at Ward's Nursery?
So, yeah, it's definitely, you know, fall is for planting, and it will be fall by Sunday for sure. So great weather to do lots of things. So my brother gave you the weather stick, and I brought you a colchicum, otherwise known as a fall crocus, sometimes referred to as naked ladies.
Aha, this is Lilac Wonder. It's also known as
Lilac Wonder. Lilac Wonder is the selection.
I see.
Yes.
And now this is aiming down too, so I think a low front is coming.
Looks like it. Yep. I agree.
You might wonder why they call that a naked lady.
Do they call it a naked lady?
I have a hard time not telling you the answer, so let me go for it. Well, basically,
you stole it. I'm going back to my computer.
What's going to happen in the spring is that plant's going to produce a whole bunch of foliage, green foliage, and then it'll die back down, and you at least let it die. And if you wanted to cut it back when it's really yellow, that's fine. All that energy is going back in the bulb.
Yeah.
Then in the fall, right around now, even a little earlier, these are going to pop up with no foliage, just flowers. So they don't have any foliage. Hence the name.
Naked lady.
Yeah. Okay.
So a pretty cool plant. Very hardy. You plant it deep like you would a daffodil or a tulip.
How deep? A couple feet?
I mean, 4 or 5 inches. So the bulb is 3 inches above or below the soil line.
All right, I'm holding this up for the cameras for those of you who are watching.
So a little deeper than your pinch there. And I do like to mention, because I sometimes forget that, fall crocus, they are a poisonous plant.
Oh, my gosh.
It's not that you can't handle them and plant them, everything, just don't eat them.
Okay. And is there a danger that people would eat them? Well, I guess there's a danger people would eat any plant.
Exactly.
You've heard the station.
Yep.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen often, though.
No.
There's lots of poisonous plants, and you don't see a lot of problems.
No, most of them, I feel like they kind of almost give themselves away. A poisonous plant often looks poisonous, and they don't taste good. Really bitter, really quickly or something, but you never know. And
even animals, like the horses, there'll be poisonous plants growing in the fields.
They don't
touch them.
I've heard red maple's poisonous.
Red maple is poisonous.
But you can tap red maples.
You can tap any maple. The sugar content goes up when you get closer to sugar maple. But
Norway's are probably kind of...
I don't think I'd recommend that.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey,
where are we going?
Good now? Can we take a call or two? All right, let's do that then. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the gardening show. And Carrie in Plainfield. Carrie, you're on.
Hi. My question pertains to garlic. Each year I harvest, probably 2,000 soft-neck garlic plants, and they're grown in raised beds. Now, this year, the leaf growth... It lost its green color, and it seems like they all wilted much earlier than usual. And for the first time ever, at least half of those bulbs, they looked horrible compared to the other years. The clothes just didn't form nicely into, where I got nice-looking bulbs. They were separated from each other. And, I saw most of this garlic to a person who braids it, and he sells it at a garlic festival. And I didn't do it this year just because the bulbs were unattractive and you couldn't even do the braiding with the leaf growth the way it was. So my question, I was wondering if it was just too much moisture this summer.
Well, I was actually going to say the opposite, that when the garlic was coming in and really expanding, this was late May and then through June, it was too dry. Mm. There was a time when I had to run out and actually water my garlic for
I do water it, and it needs to be watered.
Mine came up and it looked pretty good, but there was this moment where it seemed to be a little too stressed. The other thing is, you're growing 2,000, so you're growing a lot more than I do, but raised beds can, because of the fact that they're out of the ground, you can have some stresses on the edges where the temperature fluctuation is more significant on the edge of those beds because of
I understand that. Yeah.
And so, bringing them in or a little bit more or irrigating them a little more than the ones in the middle.
Yeah, it's just that I've been doing this for maybe a dozen years and I've never really had a problem with it at all. And this year it was like, wow, what happened to it? So
we had some beds that they've always been in. We had some really extreme weather this year, depending upon where you are. I mean, we had a longer period of hot weather.
Hot and dry for a while.
We're seeing things happen that don't normally happen.
Abnormally wet for a while.
It was strange.
Pretty big extremes.
Yeah.
All right. Hope not. Hopefully not next year.
Yeah. Hopefully not.
Always thanks, Carrie. We appreciate the call. It's 800-348-2551, The Gardening Show. Last one for the summer. There will be some in autumn, though, I understand. Let's go to Helene in Ashfield, Mass. Helene, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Good to have you here.
Good. So I have a fairly newly planted peach tree. It's been in 3 or 4 years. This is the first year it was covered in peaches, And the other day they were almost ripe, and we went out and the whole tree was tipped over.
Yep.
So I don't know if it was an animal or if the ground's too wet from all the rain. But well, can I save the tree?
Well, the first thing I would recommend is if I'm assuming that are there roots that you can see kind of up out of the ground now?
The ground is bulged up in the back, but it's not. They're not totally exposed.
All right, so I would, and the leaves are still probably not overly wilted or anything at this point, correct? They still kind of look good, especially if it's been moist and you indicated it was. So I would definitely, you know, straighten that thing back up. You might have to remove some of the peaches to get rid of some of the weight.
I picked all the peaches immediately.
Okay, perfect. Yep, so then, yes, absolutely, prop it up. You want to make sure that you don't hear, like, cracking noises when you do it, so just slowly, gently, try to get it as close to straight as you can. You may not be able to get it completely straight the way it was all at one shot, and that's actually okay. What you'll do is you use a series of, like, two or three stakes and some twine or some wire, and I always recommend using an old hose if you have a piece of a hose to kind of put the wire through so that the wire is not up against the actual trunk of the tree and causing additional injuries. And then you're
gonna, that makes sense.
Yep. So you just start to straighten it up. It's easier with certainly two people. It can be done by yourself, but a couple of people working together, straighten it up. And if it doesn't seem to want to go all the way straight, stop. Let it sit there for a day or two. And then move it more, and it'll go straight.
Oh,
and
cool.
You probably will be fine. It's happened at a time of the year when it's not the worst time of year to move things. We're getting into that part of the year where planting's really good, moving things, and especially woody plants coming up soon, a little later. But I think you're going to be okay. Straighten it back up, and you should be okay.
So I don't want to totally dig it up and start over.
No, I think you could prop it back up. My guess would be.
You may want to trim it a little bit, and then next year you may thin some of those. If you get a whole lot of peaches early, you may thin it out just to remove some of the weight. It's an engineering problem. It just simply can't support it.
And the last show we did, we were talking about propping up branches because people with peach trees and other fruit trees were having the branches actually break. A certain branch or more than one would actually break rather than the whole tree going over. So you're lucky and you didn't have any breaks, but you might want to consider creating some props for those branches, especially on that downhill side.
Yeah, and that would just be temporarily props. When you start to get the peaches, you kind of put them in and then take them away when the peaches are gone.
All right, we'll take a break here. It's Vox Pop, the gardening show. Fred, Bob, and Greg are here to answer your questions. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is the number. Ray Graff with you on a gardening show, and we are joined today, as always, by Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward. A couple of emails here, gentlemen, and then back to the phones. This is one from our producer asking forgiveness. The 2018 fall equinox will be at 9:54 Eastern on Saturday, September 22nd. All right.
Thanks, Jim.
Jim Lavoulis. This one is from D in Cornwall-on-Hudson. Last fall, we mulched our perennial garden with chopped leaves that we'd raked off of our lawn. We left the mulch in place this spring. The plants came up okay, but they didn't seem to thrive this summer, but that could also be the result of too much rain. Can we continue to mulch with leaves, or do you recommend a commercial shredded bark instead?
I think leaf mold can work really well if what they mean by mulching is they're kind of burying the crowns of their plants. That could be a little stifling. So in other words, are they pushing everything in there and not really leaving a little space around where things come up? That would be something to consider. They still may need some nutrients. Those leaves are breaking down. They're taking a little nutrient, a little nitrogen, a little phosphorus, a little potassium out of the soil. So maybe amending the garden with that this fall and or in the spring might make a big difference.
Typically, we'd like to recommend you compost the leaves first.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Get them to break down before you put them on something so that they have a chance to decompose a bit before. And again, not too deep. You never want to bury things.
All right, and then D follows up with, and should we rake up the leaf mulch in the spring?
Yeah, so that gets back to the, were they putting too much on?
Yeah.
Using it as a summer mulch, which is, 2 inches around all your plants is one thing. Covering the whole yard or the whole garden with it and then not removing it could certainly stifle
and
things.
Smothering the entire perennial garden to a depth of beyond 3 inches is going to definitely suppress not only weeds but perennials.
What about me leaving all the leaves on my lawn this fall?
You know, the best thing is actually just mulch them up and chop them up with like a mulching blade. Only just let them go back in. You're just going to basically recreate what nature is going to do. You certainly could leave
them
there.
I'm going to record this because you saved me a couple of days' work.
We call it composting in place.
I like it. All right,
this one get a little excess. I mean, you might have too many leaves, Ray.
You know what, Greg? Don't rain on my parade.
Just run over them 5 or 6 times with a mower.
All right, this one came from Ann in Adams. I'd call, but I'm outside listening to you and tearing apart my rock garden and cussing. I have a small annoying hill I did not want to mow, so laid down some landscape cloth, rocks on top, nice plants, and it turned into a massive weed garden. No weeds under the cloth. They all grew above it and between the rocks. I hope to redo it in the spring, but I don't want the weeds to grow like they did this year. Is it possible with a rock garden, or should I forget it and weed whack the hill? Thanks from a frustrated gardener. That's Ann in Adams.
Oh, boy.
I mean, first thing is by pulling up the fabric, you'll remove most of the weed issue. It'll be probably much cleaner underneath. But, you know, part of gardening is weeding, so staying on top of it, being a little more consistent with pulling what comes up that you don't want is kind of what I'd recommend.
I personally hate landscape fabric because the weeds grow on top of it. Absolutely. They grow down into it. You pull the weeds out, you pull the fabric up. It's easier to just weed it, mulch it, and weed it.
It is.
The landscape, the easiest thing in the world to take care of is a lawn.
Definitely.
Mow it, and you mow it. And if you're going to weed whack it,
okay. Landscape fabric has actually been leading to more and more issues, and it's a landscaper's in most cases nightmare. A lot of homeowners like it because I put it in my garden, I put it in my landscape, and I don't have to weed for 5-8 years. But then eventually you do, and then it becomes a nightmare. But not to drag this out, but at the last International Society of Arboriculture show, I just went out in Ohio. There's more research that actually has been leading to decreased health in soils based on landscape fabrics. And the gist of it is that the organic particles, like the leaves in your lawn that you mulch up, you want them to go back down into the soil profile.
Yeah.
If you put landscape fabric, you basically just stop that process. So even the mulches we put on top don't ever get into the soil profile anymore. So you're stopping a natural process, and it's creating poor soil health and hence poor plant health.
Can I just say, if you spend 40 minutes mowing your lawn, a week, say, maybe more, maybe less, if you spent that much time weeding a couple of gardens in addition, it would look pretty good.
This last email is from Erica. Do you have to prune fruit trees to get them to produce fruit?
The answer to that is no. They would probably produce fruit even if you didn't do any pruning. Would you get much more fruit out of it if you did precise or proper pruning? Absolutely. You could increase fruit production by making good pruning cuts at the right time of year. You can also make more flowers on plants by making, literally good pruning cuts at the right time of year.
I think most, a good example, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, most of the time when people don't get fruit on a fruit tree, it's in too much shade, if it's in any amount of shade.
A lot of times.
If you ever take a little hike and you're walking by an old apple tree that's growing out of the side of some hedgerow and you see that no one has pruned that thing forever and it's all, one little section of it's still alive, but it has a few fruit. If that tree was in the open, it was all cleaned up, it could head in multiple directions, it's going to produce a lot of fruit.
Okay, second question from Erica, and then we'll go back to the phones. Erica wants to know, will trees produce fruit if their blossoms are blown off in the wind?
Well, if you removed all the flowers and prevented any of them from actually being pollinated and followed through to get fruit, yes, you could feasibly, but the chance of you getting every single flower from the wind is pretty, you'd have to be in a pretty windy spot, but I think it's possible.
Yeah, if the flowers are not pollinated, and that can be because the weather is getting in the way of the actual pollinators getting to the plants, or you don't have a reasonable pollination pairs, and with apples you often need, two different kinds of trees.
Okay.
But wind by itself shouldn't be a problem.
All right. Back to the phones we go here, and Kevin in Holly, Mass. Kevin, you're on.
Hi, thanks a lot. I'm calling because I've been noticing that moss seems to be becoming much, much more prevalent. I live in an area that is about 1,500 feet northwest aspect, primarily forested northern hardwoods. I've been here about 25 years, and as I've been here, I've noticed that the lichens on the trees have just gone crazy. They're wonderful. They're all over the trees. And in about the past 5 years, I've been noticing moss. Apparently, it seems like it's invading downhill out of the forest. to the bases of the trees, and on a lot of these trees, the mosses have gone up the trunk and are completely overtaking the lichen areas.
Yep.
Well, and looking for some thoughts on it.
Well, there's you're talking about two different things. First off, and I think you know that the lichen is actually a cross between an algae and a fungi.
Yep.
And it's a symbiotic relationship, and they often say it's a good sign of air quality, and it literally uses the tree. It also uses rocks as a place for it to grow. It doesn't really give anything back to the tree that we know of, or the rock, but it doesn't hurt the tree or the rock either. It's just looking for a place to grow. The moss, on the other hand, if it's in the lawn, and I certainly won't take that question away from Bob over here, because he's the turf grass guy, but if it isn't, you mentioned an older forest or more of a mature, ecosystem with sugar maples and hemlocks and maybe some yellow birch in there. Part of an old growth forest ecosystem, at least climax stage of that in the Northeast, is moss. And moss can take hundreds of years to grow up trunks of trees, and it's not a bad thing at all. It's actually part of the north. If you went to an old growth forest in New York State or anywhere in the Northeast, you would definitely see large blankets of moss up on trees. And the older the tree and the older the forest with the least amount of disturbance, often the higher the moss will go.
Yeah. So if the yard was disturbed 25 years ago, if it was a cleared area, excavation occurred, things changed, and that what he's describing
could start to move over.
Okay, get a little closer to the mic there.
Great. Oh, sorry about that. So if you're working 25 years back and what you originally had was a newly disturbed area, an area that was recently cleared, the house was built, or something changed, then what you're seeing is a natural progression.
I'm familiar with some of those in my past. I'm a retreaded forester that went to Paul Smith's 50 years ago.
Great.
And so I'm familiar with some of the dynamics like that, but the proliferation of the moss, I mean, just completely covering the trunks right over the lichens, and I know the lichens are an indicator of probably better air quality over a period of time.
Okay.
But it's really noticeable, and it's not specific to one species.
Yeah, there are some climate change issues, too, in this sort of thing.
I know the trees can usually handle it, but I've never seen anything happen like this in 50 years.
Yeah. Well, the moss, I've seen some ridiculously mossy forests, especially old-growth forests with very little disturbance, so I wouldn't worry too much about the moss on the trees. If it is encroaching the lawn, that usually indicates that the lawn might have some issues and some adjustments might be made to sort of favor the grass and not the moss. And Bob's probably no better guy here than to talk about that.
Oh, really? Bob, you're the guy?
I'm the moss guy.
Can you come over and look at the moss in my back 40?
I've been called a lot of things.
There's no real grass there. It's just moss out in the back 40.
But never moss, man.
Well, there's so much shade.
Well, that's the problem. Yeah.
All right.
You have moss or you have mud. That's the choice.
Yeah. And we get both.
Yeah.
Doubly blessed. Yep. Over to Mary in Youngsville. Mary, you're on.
Hi. I grew a peach tree from seed, and it's about a foot high. It's its first year, and I don't know what to do with it over the winter.
Is it in the ground?
No, it's in about a 8 to 10 inch pot on my back deck.
So you could go ahead and plant it in the location you want, and then of course you may or may not want to protect it from deer browse, snow load, etc. So you do want to keep that all those things in mind. But getting the root system in the ground is probably the best thing you could do for it.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be concerned too as to what variety that seed peach is, because that may or may not be a hardy peach tree in this climate. I don't know if you know that or not, as to what type of peach it was.
Well, I got it from a friend who lives in the next town.
If it was grown in this area,
it's hardy around here, doesn't know what variety it is either.
That doesn't matter. If it's growing, it's growing.
Yeah, you'd be okay with that.
All right. So, thank you very much for your information.
Yep. When you do install it, just make sure you don't plant it too deep. Make sure that the ground level of the container is either at the ground level of around it, or even slightly higher is fine. And I would also watch and tell you to watch out for voles, not to bring those guys up again. But you can make a little hardware type cloth or some kind of little screen around that little tree. It's going to be really tender. And the chance of a rabbit or a vole not getting that, if you live unprotected, is probably pretty slim.
Okay. Let's go over to Monica. Hello, Monica in Lee, Massachusetts. You're on.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I live in Lee, and my house faces east, and there are four pine trees in front of it, so it has very little, you know, sunlight. But I'm looking for something to place in front of my house, and, you know, to kind of frame it off, something that'll grow about 3 or 4 feet high, that maybe would have flowers. I'd love to have azaleas there, but I don't think it would take because of that shade from the pine trees.
I think azaleas are a possibility. Do you have any direct light hitting the ground where you want to plant?
There's some for a small period of time, maybe in, you know, an hour or so during the day. It'll come past the pine trees and come from the side, and then it moves past the house.
Would grass grow in that area at all?
Yes, grass is growing there now.
Okay, well, that's a good barometer. If grass is growing, you've got enough light for, as Greg said, for azaleas, rhodies, mountain laurel, Pieris japonica, boxwood, things of that sort.
Yep. If you are planting those species, one thing to consider would be actually the limiter would be probably wind. And I don't know if you've got a real windy site in there. It sounds like probably not with all the shade, but...
It's not windy, so azaleas, boxwoods wouldn't really have any flowers. It would just be the greenery, right?
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, we would recommend any of those plants that we just mentioned would be ideal for an east exposure, which you have with some reasonable light. And it sounds like it's probably more than an hour if the grass is growing well.
Yep. A lot of times filtered light will... you know, give you a lot more options than people realize. They think shade, but that filtered light is often a really, really good growing condition.
Not to mention perennials that would do well.
Oh, lots of stuff.
I will just throw one possible wrench in there, is that because you live in Lee, a lot of Lee has a high pH soil because of the mines there.
Limestone.
And so you could just check your neighbor's yards and see if how the rhododendron, azalea, populations are doing. If they're performing well,
and
then
you could
there
do
shouldn't
a quick
be a problem.
Soil test, and you can amend that with some sulfur if you need to acidify it.
Yep.
Okay.
But checking the pH would be ideal before you start to plant,
especially
with what Greg brought up. Yep.
All right, Monica, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Over to Bruce in Turner's Falls. Bruce, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a question regarding that invasive species known as kudzu that seems to be taking over the entire Northeast. I travel quite a bit in western Massachusetts, southern Vermont, northern Connecticut, and I see this kudzu every year getting more and more and more pernicious. I see vast acreages of it, and I see it's killing trees. Is there anything, are the natural resources officers aware of this, and is there any way to begin eradicating it?
Yeah, well, first, I would have to say that I don't think you're talking about kudzu vine. Kudzu is actually a southern species and not hardy in our Northeast. So it's not kudzu, but there's no doubt that there's another nasty one that's taken over.
Nice
it could be
northern,
bittersweet.
Yeah, a nice northern version would be bittersweet.
That's what I was thinking, bittersweet.
If you see it everywhere, if you really do see
it, what that
then
is?
It's probably bittersweet.
Oriental
Asian,
bittersweet.
Yep, Asian bittersweet.
Yep.
So
that's a killer.
Yes.
Okay, we had that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually killing trees because it blocks the sunlight, I read.
Well, sometimes grape will do that, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, that could be grape. You might be seeing a few different things sort of happening. Grape is a great smother. It smothers often plants. Although it's not really, I would say, not really invasive, but it can be a nuisance. Oriental bittersweet is a killer vine. When we say killer vine, we're talking about that plant will literally wrap itself around a tree and choke it right out.
But it's a strangler.
That's a strangler, not a shader.
Not a shader, yeah.
That's right.
Is there any movement afoot to begin the eradication effort?
So it's
considered... Well, they're on the invasive species list, so you can't grow them or sell them anymore.
Yeah. Yep. As a homeowner, you can certainly try to control it. Right now, all I sort of know of anecdotally is that newer invasive vines, hardy kiwi specifically, is being controlled in some ways because it's in very limited pockets here and there. And so they're able to get at those and try to do them in. Bittersweet, I think, is is so pervasive.
Answer to your question, there's nobody trying to do anything to control that in the native areas. It's just almost impossible.
Yeah, it's through educational.
You can hire people, though, to take care of your property.
Yeah.
There are businesses out there that that are there to control invasive species.
Yep. And then in terms of the Invasive Species Council, there are, I know, certainly putting a lot of effort to educating homeowners, property owners, what it is, what the issues are, working with nurseries not to be able to sell these types of plants. And they provide unlimited amount of information on how to control these things. And they're looking for new ones. So, you know, they are doing a lot of different things, but a lot of it's educational based.
All right, Bruce, thank you very much. We will have to take a break here. It's The Gardening Show. The number is 800-348-2551. Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves. We'll be here until 3 o'clock to answer your questions. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with the gardeners, Greg, Fred, and Bob, answering your questions here at 800-348-2551. And the lightning round is straight ahead. So we'll do 4 emails quickly and then get to as many calls as we can here before 3. This one's from Todd. Is there a tomato plant that doesn't get enormous but still produces plenty of fruit?
Jetstar.
Yeah.
Jetstar?
There's some small patio
Better
types.
Boy.
Yep. They don't get huge.
Are you making these names up?
No.
Okay. Jetstar and Better Boy. It sounds like races, you know. In the third race, Jetstar beat Better Boy.
Mariglobe, I think, too.
Okay, very
good. And there's a few others, but I can't remember.
This one's from Monica. I have a large lamb's ear plant that went berserk with blooms this summer. Now the base of the plant has a ton of new leaves, but there are a lot of 2-foot-tall blooms that are looking leggy. Should I cut them down for the winter? That's from Monica.
You can cut them back.
Yes. Cut them down.
Cut them back.
Quick answer.
Leave the bottom. Cut the tops.
Leave the bottom, yep.
All right, a mum question from Marie. I'm planning to move and would like to dig up a couple of my mums and plant them in pots to take with me. They have been in the ground for years. They have to live in plants for at least a couple of for at least a couple of weeks. Is there anything I should do to make sure they survive?
I would say water it before you dig it and make sure you get a bigger root ball on as you can, and this time of year should be fine.
Yes, I agree.
Yep. This one's from Donna. What vine would you suggest for a 7-foot trellis on the north side of the house? The vine would not receive any direct light.
Dutchman's pipe.
Hydrangea vine.
Hydrangea.
Could try honeysuckle.
Yeah, I could try honeysuckle.
Could try clematis.
Yes, clematis.
I think Dutchman's pipe won the 5th race, actually. All right, over to the phones we go. Let's go to Joseph in Bern. Joseph, you're on.
Hi, guys. I messed up, and I planted a pear tree and some blueberries in the wrong place, and I want to move them. And it sounds like this is a good time to do it. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would wait till the leaves start to drop off. October. Mid-October. But yes, once you got half the leaves off that plant, you're good.
And
it's
dormant. You did it recently? This was this year?
They were both planted last year.
So they'll move very easily.
Yeah. Yep, just try to get the biggest root ball you can on them and try not to break the root ball in the process.
All right.
Okay, and any other advice on that?
Keep them watered into the winter a week.
Don't plant them any deeper than they were before.
Yeah. Definitely. Don't plant them any deeper than they originally were planted. That's right. Very important.
All right, Joseph, thanks a lot for the call. Now we go to CJ in Beckett. CJ, you're on.
Hi, guys. I have a 3.5-year-old Bosque pear tree. It was grown from a whip. It's been well pruned, no pest issues. It's planted on sort of the bottom side of a mild slope. And I planted it there because my experience is that pear trees do better with, they do better with water than a lot of other fruit trees I've had. And this year, after we had our little mini monsoon season, I noticed it started dropping some leaves, and the leaves started losing some color, started getting yellow. And it looked to me like maybe I started getting a little bit of root rot. And so I tried kind of re-sculpting the soil around it and trying to get a little better drainage, but it's continued to look pretty sickly. So my questions are, do you think I have root rot? Do you think it'll survive? Is there anything I can do?
I personally
get it the heck out of there.
Yeah, I would move it. You're going to fight that spot forever. It may not have root rot. It doesn't need root rot to have all those symptoms. If it had true root rot, you would have like massive wilting.
It's wilting, it's yellowing, it's losing leaves. Yep.
And it can do that just from having too much water. But either way, the answer to that would be in the fall. It's already going dormant, it sounds like. So I don't think you have to wait too much longer. Move it to the drier side. I find that pears don't like it too wet. They might like it wetter than like apples and things, but in general.
Yeah, I would never put an apple in this location. Yep, it's definitely too wet for apple.
It's going to be too wet for the pear as well, it sounds like. So uphill.
All right, okay. CJ, thank you for the call. Over to Greg in Tannersville. Greg.
Hi, guys. I have a 1954 house, block foundation, and I'm suspecting that there's probably Orangeburg pipe that was used for the drainage pipes. We have to excavate around the foundation due to water infiltration. And as you can imagine, I've got some nice old growth shrubs in there all around the house. I'm wondering if I should take those out. I'd like to preserve them and put them back once the excavation's done and the new drainage is put in. Should I do it in the fall or should I do it in the spring?
I think I would wait till the plants, if you could, wait till they just get into that mid-October, just a little bit more towards dormancy. And then I would move them in the fall since you want to get this work done and then just replant them in the fall.
Are they things that have been there a long time?
Sounds like it.
Yeah, they've been 1954 most of the stuff was put in.
Your percentage making that sometimes isn't real good, so you're going to have to dig as big a ball as you possibly can on that stuff.
That said, some guys with a nice small excavator very good at doing this. So you could talk to your excavation
guy. Might be hard by hand because it's going to be heavy.
It's going to be hard by hand, and I would definitely wait.
my hand digging days are over.
But do wait till they go dormant if you can. It's going to increase the survivability.
We're up the casual at 2,000 feet.
And if you tell us the plants, we can tell you if they're better to wait till spring to move. But in general,
they're green.
They're green. All right. Yeah, good for you.
I will tell you this. Ewes are really hard to move. If you have a lot of ewes, I have a feeling with those tap roots that they get,
might be ewes,
I don't think you're moving to ewes. If you want to look online what a ewe looks like, you can skip the ewes, do everything else.
Yeah, they're evergreen shrubs. I don't know what they are, but they've been there since the 1950s. I can tell you that
they're all movable. If you're going to do it in the fall and you can get them back in place before the first second week of November, it can work out. It can work out.
All right. Hey, good luck, man. That sounds like a tough one. Thank you, Greg. Over to Lou in Altamont. You're on.
All right. I got out the three questions. The first one, a quick one. What is that weather twig? What type of tree?
It's a balsam.
Balsam.
Balsam fir.
Balsam fir.
Yeah, the telltale twig.
Okay.
Sure.
Next one is dense grass, dense shade grass. What is the best variety?
Well, you know, in dense shade, nothing grows, whatever kind of grass it is. But typically your fine fescues, some of your tall fescues, there are some shade-tolerant bluegrasses. You always want to use a mix, not something that just has one variety. But if you got really heavy dense shade, you don't grow grass.
Yeah.
Okay, and the third one and the more important question. We happen to have a black mulberry tree that had two trunks on it. It was two individual trees, but the trunks had merged at one point in time. Both of them went over during the last snowstorm. I would like to cable one of the trees and bring it back up, the one that has the best attachment to the ground. What do you recommend in terms of, do you guys use a screw through the tree and then attach something to that screw bolt, or do you use the cable going through a hose or something of that nature?
There's a few different ways that cables are attached. The ways that you mentioned are a couple of them, and there's a more newer way that more folks have been using, which is a little less invasive with the tree, and it's actually a wraparound. Now, in the past, wraparounds, as you know, as most people know, as the tree grows, that's going to strangle it. But these are wraparounds that are designed to expand with tree growth. There's one brand that's called Cobra Cable Systems, but there's lots of them out there now, I'm sure. But that's another anchor point as well. But otherwise, all of those methods you mentioned are all viable.
All right, Cobra Cobra, C-O-B-R-A?
Yeah, it's basically just a cable system that wraps around a tree as opposed to that drilling a hole all the way through it. So it enables you to create a cable attachment point without actually drilling a major hole through a tree. But if you did drill a hole through a tree, that absolutely works too. And it's been used for years and people still do it, and it does work as long as it's done properly.
Lou, thank you for the call. Jeff in Goshen. Jeff, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I've got about an 8-foot sour cherry tree. It's in year 3. I've got a lot of other fruit trees that are doing well. This one in year 1, I got 2 cherries. Year 2, I got about 9 cherries. This third year, it was fully budded out. Not a thing opened up on it. Looks like a totally dead tree. And then about 2 weeks later, I got this stem coming out at the base of it that's shot up about 3 feet already. The question is, is my root ball healthy enough that I can build off this new stem that's come up, or should I start all over?
You know, there's a good chance that the sucker that's coming up from the base that we're talking about is a different species. Most of those fruit trees are grafted. You might have a cherry there, but the odds of it being that same cherry, very slim. Probably almost non-existent.
Basically, that tree's gone.
Yep. Replant.
And any idea what would have killed it in year 3? It was doing so well.
Could have been a borer. Could have been an insect type of thing. Could have been a fungus. It's hard to say for sure.
So if I want to just get lucky, let it grow, otherwise put a new one in.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're allowed to certainly let it grow, and it will turn into probably some type of cherry. It just may not be the one that you're after. You could still leave it there and plant a new one somewhere else.
Thanks so much.
You got it.
Thanks, Jeff.
I think it often is plum. I think they put them on.
Right? Oh, yeah. Plums a lot of times root bases.
Yeah, a lot of times not same.
All right, over to Mike in Huntington. Mike, you're on.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Yeah, good. We're all right.
I have a grove of staghorn sumac that grew in an old garden, and I like them because they attract birds, and I'm a wildlife artist, and I just love to see those, you know, the birds get up there and get the berries. But I want to get rid of them because I do have some more. But I know from, I've been in the tree business all my life, and you cut them off at the base, and they come right back.
Yeah, there's a trick to that. The easiest way to get rid of them is to cut them. But the key on this one is the timing. If you cut them at the wrong time, you get a whole bunch more of them. If you cut them at the right time, you get rid of the plant. Guaranteed the first year you start this program. The time to cut them is wait till they use up the stored energy in the root system in the spring to leaf out. As soon as they leaf out, cut them. You're going to get a little tiny regrowth probably from the root system. Cut it again. You'll never have staghorn sumac there again. I guarantee it.
I've been in the tree business all my life, and I never even thought that was the solution.
Use that stored energy against them.
Huh?
I say you use their stored energy, the need for their stored energy to leaf out against them. You let them use it up, cut them. Anything that comes up, cut them. You win. You win. You'll get rid of them by the second cut.
All right. Hey, Mike, thank you for the call. And we'll over to Michael in Sparrow Bush. Michael.
Hi. A couple of years ago, I cut down a group of trees trying to reclaim the land to make a little garden. It's been slow going because of the roots and the rocks. But in the places I've not gotten to, grass has started growing. But it's growing in clumps, and it's very hard to walk on. It's very hard to cut. I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for that other than having to dig up the whole area.
Well, I don't think there – I mean, maybe there's another suggestion, but you know, cleaning up the area, maybe you need something a little – stronger than a shovel and a pick, you know, maybe something, a machine of some kind, but taking out all of that, loosening that up, possibly hiring a landscape contractor to help you with that is what I think might be best.
Really? Another question for you. How late can I divide perennials this year and replant them?
This is a really great month to be doing it. September is excellent because it gives everything enough time to reestablish in October and
into
November.
Is there anything you wouldn't do this month, Craig?
I wouldn't do delphiniums. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do lavender. I probably would still do coneflower, but it's getting late for that.
So things like your hostas and your daylilies and your iris, and you'd do all of those.
Those are all good.
Yeah, for sure.
Siberian iris would be okay to
divide. They'd love it. Yeah.
All right, Michael, thank you very much for the call. And now it's time for Barbara in North Greenbush. Barbara, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have some fairly big bushes around the property that got away from us. And I was wondering, is it too late to prune them this fall, or should we just wait till the spring?
You know, I'd like to know what kind of shrubs those are in order to give you a more accurate answer, because some things you would not want to prune now. Some things it's
well, one's,
okay.
One's like a Christmas tree evergreen. Another one is, I think it's bridal lace.
Oh, bridal wreath spirea, maybe?
Yeah.
So everything has an ideal time to prune. And that said, fall is often not recommended for almost any pruning. But, you know, you got to do it. They're too big. You want to take them down. So running
those,
through.
Those things sound pretty hardy. And they'd probably be okay, even though it's not ideal.
Yep. Otherwise, wait till the spring. Wait till next year.
And how soon in the spring up here could we start? Would that be March, February?
You know, again, it's going to vary on what we're talking about. But bridal wreath spirea, personally, I like to get it early in the spring prior to growth, because then you can reshape it and it turns out to be a brand new shrub that season. It also depends on what type of pruning we're trying to do. Are we trying to bring it back to a small, tiny plant from a giant one? Or are we just trying to reduce it by a little bit? General rule, though, plants, shrubs that bloom on what we call previous season's wood, things like lilacs and forsythia and azaleas, those all get pruned immediately after they bloom. Things that bloom on current season's wood, examples are like Rose of Sharon. Generally, we like to prune them prior to the growth.
And then the evergreen, that Christmas tree evergreen, you could do that in April or March if you wanted to, before it grew, and that would help it. You might want to do it a second time late June or early mid-July.
All right, Barbara, thanks a lot. Over to Carol Ann in Woodstock. Carol Ann, you have about a minute.
Hi, guys. Okay, I have a peach tree that I've had for 3 years, and I've had the most wonderful peaches from it. You'd think they were from Georgia. And this year, I didn't get one peach.
So next year, you'll probably get a bunch.
Do trees need a rest
sometimes,
at times?
Essentially, that is what they need sometimes. It's
they call it alternate blooming sometimes. They just don't produce. You know, if it produced a
lot
of...
the tree itself is beautiful, you know, but not one peach.
It probably didn't have flowers, and if it doesn't have flowers, it's not going to have peaches.
It did have flowers.
Yeah, maybe they got hurt by a frost. That's possible, too.
That is possible.
Yeah,
but
I don't
because
know.
It didn't have fruit this year, that's why it's so beautiful, and it will probably have a lot of flowers coming up this spring, so you have a whole other shot at it.
Well, that was great. Boy, we got through a lot of calls today.
Cool.
Well done. Bob, how do we find out about Fatigans?
Fatigans.com. We've got some seminars coming up. Take a look. I've got one coming up on fall lawn care if you're interested.
All right, cool. And the Landis Arboretum?
It's landisarboretum.org.
And how about Ward's Nursery?
Yes, wardsnursery.com.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Support comes from Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans. Hand-picked selection of wines, single malts, and small batch bourbons, grapesandgrainswine.com. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear, including Zenka from Paris, and Coco Song from Italy, and prescription and non-prescription sunglasses. Eye exams by appointment, EYEDENTITY, eyewearalbany.com. Act Smart New York, Saratoga Springs, offering individualized outpatient counseling and Suboxone treatment for opioid use disorder and medical treatment for alcohol problems, actsmartnewyork.com. And the Arkell Museum in Canajoharie, presenting portraits and landscapes, featuring works by Gilbert Stuart, Edward Gay, and Winslow Homer. More at arkellmuseum.org. Thanks again to Greg, Fred, and Bob for being here. Thank you for listening. Terrific calls today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Deb Malik took the calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, the folks from Blue Mountain Bistro to Go in Kingston join us for their new book, Feel Good Food. Right now, stand by for news.